Hello, comrades, and welcome to Socialist Resurgence, a podcast committed to the interests of workers and the oppressed everywhere, and dedicated to the creation of a socialist world in which society is organized according to the needs of the public at large rather than for private profits. I'm your host, Alex Coy, the indigenous insurgent, coming to you from a garage apartment in San Antonio, Texas. In today's episode, we'll be talking once again with Marxist economist Osman Keshawars in a special bulletin about the GameStop short squeeze. Osman, welcome back. Thank you for being here with us today.
Hey, Alex, how are you?
Ready to talk about stocks. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, so just as a refresher for our listeners, let's talk about what exactly stocks are. My understanding is that they are a promise on return on investment with capital that does not yet exist. In Marxist terminology, it is a form of fictitious capital. Is this correct?
Yes. So when Marx talked about this in Capital, he talked about the joint stock company, which is a company that issues stock, and he basically called this sort of the highest development of the capitalist firm. In fact, capitalism is so developed that it abolishes capitalism within itself, right? It completely separates the money capitalist from the industrial capitalist. So basically what stock is it divides up the financial assets of the company and issues them as a share, right? So you put in your money and you get a return that is based on a claim to a piece of that company. So it's fictitious in the sense that fictitious in two senses, actually. So when you get a dividend on a stock, i.e. when you get a share of the profit, that value does not exist yet. That value is dependent on future production. The other way that stock is fictitious is that it transforms. So when you are thinking about a company, you say, think about any sort of manufacturing company. They produce a real good, or if you're thinking about the service economy, they produce a real good or a service, right? They have physical machines that produce physical output. But through the mechanism of the joint stock company, this physical output is transformed into a sum of money. So there's this absolute cleavage between the return on production and the sum of money that is received as interest or as asset price appreciation.
Okay, so with all that in mind, let's talk about how GameStop stock soared from about $3 a share to over $300 a share in the span of a week, without increasing the revenue or potential future profits by 300%. Let me just be absolutely clear. There is no correlation at all between GameStop's meteoric rise in stock price and GameStop literally doing anything.
Right. Let's continue on with the story about fictitious capital. So GameStop is a store that I am an elder millennial, so I am well aware of GameStop. So I would go there and I would play games there and then I would trade in my games.
Right, and they'd be like the guys from Pawn Stars all, oh, I see you have a copy of Earthbound, complete with the original box and guide. Best I can do is 25 cents store credit.
Exactly. I'd get completely ripped off at GameStop. I bought 3 copies of Skyrim for 3 different systems from a GameStop. They're basically in malls, our dying industry. Nobody goes to malls anymore. And then COVID happened and nobody's going anywhere.
And on top of that, you have the ability to download video games directly through whatever your preferred online gaming server of choice is. So that even before the pandemic, less and less people were buying physical hard copies of games because the digital is the future.
Exactly, right? Nobody buys physical games anymore. This is sort of like a casualty of technological change, right? We live in an area where the production and distribution of games is totally different than the way that it used to be. It's no longer physical media. It's now digital downloads. Nobody ever goes into a store to buy a game. Have to deal with these weirdos who are trying to rip you off. So over the past couple of years, the stock price of GameStop has been going down due to the perception that GameStop is probably not going to do well in the next couple of years. Probably a reasonable assumption. So let's leave aside all of the financial wizardry that has been going on and just talk about the real sector for a moment.
Sure.
So expected revenues are declining, a pretty reasonable assumption. And then a couple of things happened. A guy, Ryan Cohen, who is the founder of the Chewy pet food company, which is a company that has been doing really well, bought enough shares to be put on the board of directors of GameStop. And that was perceived as a good move. Now, notice the company hasn't changed at all. Real assets haven't changed. No change in production, but somebody who has made money before is now part of the board of this company. So
sure,
that changed sentiment around a little bit. He had some plans about turning it into a custom PC building kind of store,
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, plans that may or may not be good, but again, no change in revenue, nothing at all. So this type of sentiment turned the share price around a little bit. Now, and we should also say that GameStop, in terms of important things, is that GameStop is an employer, and there are 14,000 workers that currently work for GameStop. That's, I think, an important section of the story that we'll come to in a little bit. So that is the story from the real sector, keeping away from the financial side of things, a failing business model that may or may not be turning around. Now we get into the magic of what has been going on. So one of the things that makes this situation so weird is GameStop has been shorted heavily by a lot of hedge funds.
Heavily is an understatement. They've been shorted in excess of 150% of the existing stock. How does that happen? I guess maybe we should backtrack a little. What is short selling stocks?
We should start with talking about what short selling is. So basically, buying a stock that's relatively straightforward. You issue shares in your company. I say, hey, I expect you to do great in the future. Let me get a share of that. In return, you can take my money and invest it in your production or whatever. Short selling a stock is basically me going to you and saying, all right, you own a share of this company and the price of that share is $100. I think in the future that the price of that share is going to go down to 50. So let me borrow this stock from you, sell it for $100 and I'll pay you interest. And then in the future, when it goes down to 50, buy the stock back and return it to you. So I've pocketed the difference of $50. Mm-hmm. That's basically what short selling is. Now, the danger of short selling is that this exposes a company to theoretically infinite losses. If I borrow the stock and I sell it for $100 and then the price jumps up to $500, now I've lost $400 instead of gaining 50. So I forget who I think it might have been Nassim Taleb. He wrote a book called Black Swan or something like that. He was big about probability distribution and stuff like that. He basically called it picking up pennies in front of a bulldozer. You can make the $50 or you could lose infinity dollars. So that's basically what short selling. Now, if you are a little bit more irresponsible, you can short stocks multiple times, right? I can borrow stock from you and then sell it. And then somebody else has that borrowed stock, right? And then somebody can borrow that stock from this other person and sell it short again. So you can have multiple layers of shorts. And this is why GameStop's short interest is what it's called. The amount of sales that are being sold short became something like 120, 150% of the amount of shares that actually exist.
All right. Yeah. Now, and this is, I should also say, while it is extraordinary, it is not necessarily unique. In one of the worst big market bubbles in the history of modern economics, the South Sea bubble, at one time, the South Sea Company stock was valued at literally more money than was in circulation in the entirety of the British economy.
Yes, that's exactly true. And in fact, this sort of thing is actually quite common. If you look at the value of derivatives, which are financial instruments that are not stocks, but they're based on the prices of stocks, the total value of derivatives is always going to be some multiple of what the actual GDP of the entire world is. So,
Jesus.
If I'm remembering correctly, on the eve of the financial crisis, the total value of derivatives was something like 12 times the total productive output of the world.
That's insane.
So surprising how unstable the financial market is.
Yeah. Speaking of that instability, some petty bourgeois investors on a subreddit called r/WallStreetBets, which it should be noted is a notorious den of Trump supporters who only lost favor for the president when he started pumping all this money into the stock market to try and prevent the economy from collapsing at a faster rate, noticed the excess of short stocks and saw the vulnerability, as you put it, of these hedge funds who were betting on the stock to go down. Now, that sounds benign, betting on stock to go down, but what they are betting on and what they are doing in the process of short selling is betting on job losses. They are betting on the destruction of workers who rely on this company and hastening its destruction in the process. So then r/WallStreetBets comes in and they start buying up as much stock as they can to drive the price up. Do I have it correct so far?
Yeah. So the point about short selling is that if I put on my neoclassical hat here, right, and I say that short sellers have a purpose in that they identify inefficiencies in the market. So if I'm a short seller, think the price of a stock is justified by that company's revenue or potential revenue, I'm actually increasing efficiency in the market by driving the share price down closer to its actual, and I'm doing air quotes around actual, driving the share price down to its actual value. In practice, this has two really, really pernicious effects. The first one is that one of the methods that is used by hedge funds, used very commonly up until the 2008 crisis when it was banned, is called naked shorting, which is I have no collateral. I just borrow this stock completely uncovered. And if I sell it, I make the money. If I don't sell it, then you have this cascade failure of loss of capital, right? If I short something naked, I don't have anything to back it up if the share price actually rises. So what you see are strings of bankruptcies. In 2008, there were a lot of naked shorts of securities, mortgage-backed securities. When they started to go under, there was no collateral. And so you had this chain of defaults that went up the financial chain. So the first problem is that shorting creates macro instability, right? Mm-hmm. The hedge fund might make some money, I might lose some money, but because there's so much capital involved and because of the huge amount of leverage that is involved, a failure at the hedge fund level has the potential to spiral outward very quickly. I'm going to be fine if I'm a hedge fund because I'm going to get my golden parachute and my bailout, but financial crises and usually end up in real job losses and real economic recessions and ultimately austerity.
Don't you just love the stock market when, you know, it's doing fine, we get nothing, but when it crashes, we all lose our jobs, except for sometimes during a crisis when the stock market goes skyrocketing and we all lose our jobs anyway.
Oh, it's wonderful. And the, you know, if you really want to cultivate your class hatred, go look at what happened to the chief executive of Long-Term Capital Management, which is that big hedge fund that went under in the 80s that precipitated the savings and loan crisis. After that happened, he got his golden parachute. He was in obscurity for a couple of years. He's still around and he's still managing a multi-million dollar hedge fund. People still, you know, he's living the good life after destroying the lives of millions and millions of people.
Yeah, and the same is true for all these ghouls from the Bush and Reagan administrations running around in the background making things happen. They're literally still in positions of power today. Elliot Abrams, the Iran-Contra guy, still around. John Bolton, the guy who lied about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, getting millions and millions of people killed, still around. This revolving door of crooks and war criminals is infuriating. All right.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The ruling class takes care of its own.
Okay, so we have a whole bunch of retail investors, or as it's colloquially referred to on Wall Street, dumb money, buying GameStop stock to squeeze the short sellers. What effect does this have?
So what is a short squeeze? We've talked about selling short. That's basically borrowing stock and selling it, hoping that the price will go down. So if I'm shorting a stock, I can just hang out, right? The only problem is that I have to pay interest. So as long as interest payments are relatively reasonable, I can short for as long as I want. And eventually the price will go down and I can recoup my losses. If the price doesn't go down, if in fact the price starts to spike, then I have a problem because the cost of borrowing is going to increase. The person that I'm borrowing from will look at the share price and say, like, hey, what's going on here? Do you have enough money to cover this eventually? And so if the price remains reasonably low, I can say, yeah, it's totally fine. It's totally fine.
Let it ride.
But if the share prices go up, then the amount of money that I have to pay to keep borrowing the stock has to increase. Eventually, this is what's known as a margin call. A margin call is when my dealer, the person I borrowed the stock from, says, look, you have to pony up more dough. You have to pony up more collateral. I'm not going to let you keep holding on to this stock as your investment in borrowing it continues to fall relative to the price of the share. So once you get margin called, then you have to actually buy shares of this stock. You have to be like, all right, look, I'll just buy it now. Okay, I will be able to cover this. If the price goes up, I can still sell the stock. So the Wall Street Bets retail investors, they were banking on this because the number of stocks sold short was so high. They said, well, it must be relatively easy to force a margin call as long as we force the price of the GameStop shares higher and higher. So this resulted in a huge flood of retail investors coming in via apps like Robinhood is the biggest one, and then Thinkorswim and E-Trade, and all these people starting up new accounts, buying shares of GameStop, hoping to drive the price up. And that's what happened. Like, as you said, it went from, I think, something like $14 at the end of December to a high of $480, almost $500 last week.
Right. And in the process of the actual shorting that the hedge funds carried out, they had driven GameStop stock price down to, I think, $3 per share in the week just before our Wall Street bets began their flood of investment.
Right. Yeah. So the shorting by hedge funds had driven the price down to $3. That's right. So it seems like the short squeeze itself hasn't happened yet, because the amount of shorted shares last time I checked, which was yesterday, is still either close to 100% or more than 100%.
Yeah, I think it's at like 120% right now. There have been some short sellers who were forced to either make that margin call or, you know, like recoup the borrowed money. But GameStop stock as of 20 minutes ago was down 30%, but is still at over $200 a share.
Yes, that's right. It's still pretty high. The short squeeze hasn't happened yet. And I have no idea whether it will happen or not. But I mean, hedge funds were still forced to cover over the last 2 weeks. They were still forced to buy a lot of shares, and that drove the price way up.
Yeah, Melvin Capital's out $70 billion.
Right. And Melvin Capital's out $70 billion. They had to get a bailout from another pair of hedge funds, which was very funny to me. I think to the tune of $2.5 billion.
So what happens now? What is the best case scenario for all of these retail investors? And I guess I should be clear here that only 14% of Americans own individual stock investments. Like, yes, I'm sure there's many hundreds of millions more Americans that are indirectly invested in the stock market through 401ks and retirement accounts. And that's a whole other can of worms that I fucking hate. But, you know, we'll deal with that another time, because there's just too much. So investing in individual stocks is primarily a bourgeois activity. That isn't to say that many working class individuals haven't gotten in on the GameStop action as just, you know, a way of throwing a middle finger to these hedge fund managers. And I'm sure some of them are going to be able to make an increase on their investments. But the people who will chiefly be benefiting from this are like the kind of petty bourgeois traders who could, you know, afford to drop $50,000 on GameStop stock when it was at $3 a share, and now, you know, will be making 300% of their investment. But what about people who got into this late? What about working class people who are buying stock now or bought stock last week before the markets closed? What is the best case scenario and what is the worst case scenario?
So this is really important. So the best case scenario, this is sort of a weird technical aspect of the way that financial markets work, right? There's a short squeeze and the share price goes way up for, you know, a few days. So the big famous one that comparisons are often drawn to is the Volkswagen short squeeze, where I don't remember exactly how high Volkswagen's shares went to, but for a day it was the most valuable company in the entire world because of the short squeeze. Now, the best case scenario is that happens and people are able to take their money out at the same time that the institutions that are short cover their positions. So our friends who cashed in to buy one stock of GameStop, one or two shares, they're able to sell it at some high price, maybe even $1,000, get a couple of $1,000 out of it. The worst case scenario is that the short squeeze doesn't happen, and in fact, the shorts have covered already, and the share price is driven down while sophisticated institutions and retail investors take their money out, you know, in some cases, significant sums. Now, the ultimate danger here is there's a conflation of this with class warfare, right? There's this sort of narrative that's going through a lot of people, like, we're sticking it to the big hedge funds. We're sticking it to the man. These are small retail investors that are, in fact, engaging in some kind of class warfare against big finance. The problem is you can, and I actually dislike the phrase, you can never dismantle the master's house with the master's tools. But I think in this case, it's very apt. You can't destroy the financial system by engaging in the financial system.
At the end of the day, the market will be fine. And when prices balance out, it will be the large multi-million international conglomerates that just sort of consume the wreckage of what was left behind in the wake of, you know, each individual bubble. On another note, I think it's important to state again that stock trading is still primarily a bourgeois activity. And I don't mean that in like some moralistic sense of like, oh man, like, you know, fucking poor people shouldn't have nice things. How dare you eat caviar? That's so bourgeois. I mean, like, no, owning stocks is literally a bourgeois property relation. And the dream of getting a windfall from the stocks is a dream of class mobility, of ascending to the bourgeois class, and it is not a dream of workers' power. And we need to be very clear about that.
Right. And so my field of studies is in rents and real estate, and you can see a very similar parallel. The dream of homeownership and owning properties to rent out to somebody else. This is, you know, while we do have working class people who own rental properties, and we do have working class people who own stocks, by its nature, the stock market is a bourgeois institution, and the operations of the stock market can only serve to uphold the capitalist system. And of course, so the thing is, like, small retail traders don't drive much. And I think, to your point, the most important thing to remember in this whole GameStop stuff is that the price is not being moved very much by retail traders. Sure. Not much at all. The top two biggest holders of GameStop stock are Fidelity Mutual and BlackRock, another hedge fund. So really, this is actually the story of hedge funds circling other hedge funds like vultures. That's the story of the short squeeze.
That's a wonderful image.
Right. And maybe it was tipped a little bit over the edge by the tiny little squirrel of the retail investor nipping at the heels of the other vulture. But ultimately, as is always the case when you have something like this, this is between two big capitalists duking it out. And in the end, the working class can only lose. Right. The story of Reddit being a distributed hedge fund is a really cool, you know, video game type of fantasy story. But in the end, it's only a fantasy. And I can imagine exactly why, you know, these big hedge funds that are actually invested in the short squeeze are remaining silent about it. It's a very awesome narrative to push. But in the end, again, this is just a fight between a group of big capitals jockeying for position within the financial system.
Sure. And the only way in which it is a fight between, like, the little guy and the big guy is that many of these investors are petty bourgeois, small-time capitalists, small business owners who are, you know, hoping to stick it to the bigger capitalists in the hedge fund. I've actually drawn parallels between the GameStonk crisis and the riot that we saw on the Capitol Hill with all of the MAGA red hats. In both cases, it is the outrage and revenge of the petty bourgeoisie against the big bourgeoisie who has utterly failed them, and they feel rightfully betrayed.
Right, and you can sort of, actually, the narratives that have developed around both of them, you can sort of see it's a kind of vulgar class consciousness. There's not anything about we are being exploited through and through, both by the financial system, by the wage system. It is that the big dogs are not letting us play with our money the same way that they do. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the difference between crony capitalism and real capitalism, right? If we were actually a free capitalist society, I would be able to risk as much of my money as I want.
Right. If the markets were even more deregulated, imagine how much havoc we could wreak.
Exactly. So this is sort of the story growing up around it. Now, I'm kind of an optimist. Like, I go onto TikTok and I see the Zoomers making their memes about hedge fund managers jumping out of buildings and stuff like that. And it's like, that's hopefully it leads to something. This is, I guess, you know, baby's first exposure to the unfairness.
Well,
of
also,
the
financial I'm definitely not an optimist, but also I think the kids are okay. The Zoomers give me so much hope. They're so much more radical and class conscious than I was at their age comparatively. So, you know, the kids are all right.
Yeah, they're on top of it. And I am hopeful for their generation.
I can't wait for them to build a society that would guillotine me as a conservative.
Yeah, I mean, the kids are all about automated luxury gay space communism. I am here for that.
We're going to backtrack a little bit because you were drawing some parallels to, you know, getting people invested in home ownership and collecting rent. And I think it's important to note that the insidious lie at the heart of the American dream is the idea that everyone can be bourgeois, that we can live in a society where everyone lives off of rent or dividends or, you know, stock income. And I don't know, I guess then there's just like one guy doing all of the labor somewhere in Queensland.
Right. Yeah. So actually, that's a really good point. And so actually, when I talk about rents and I talk about the phenomenon of working class landlords, the idea is no working class person says, look, I want to exploit my fellow man. I have worked hard for my entire life and now I don't want to work anymore because work is dumb. What you actually hear is this sort of desperation. It is like, sure. Well, I don't have a pension anymore. There's no way that Social Security is going to give me a dignified retirement. The only way that I can survive is by owning property, right? Once I'm old, old and no longer able to work. The only thing that I can do is own property. And if you read the narratives of many people who are investing in GameStop, you actually get this same sort of desperation.
Absolutely.
You read about people who are like, there's no way I'm ever going to retire. I have $2,000 in my retirement account. That's nothing. I will work until I die.
And I'm also reading all of these stories of these investors who did cash out already and they like made a 300% profit on their investment. They're using it to pay medical bills. They're using it to pay back rent. And, you know, all of these ghouls on Fox News and these Jim Cramer types are trying to paint them as like Jimmy Kimmel called them Russian interlopers on his show. And, you know, all of these like financial advice gurus who look like the villains from The Hunger Games are like trying to paint these short squeezers as, you know, a riotous mob or as it like a hate crime against the rich. And I'm like, oh, yeah. They're doing such awful things like paying off medical debt and bills. You know, it's not like they're getting to keep any of this money that they've made, at least for, you know, the lower strata of the working class or the petty bourgeois who are, you know, investing in this out of, like you said, desperation. All of that money is going straight back to the capitalist class in the form of rents or bills.
Exactly. Right. By the way, Jim Cramer is a funny one because he was openly a short seller and then talked about the way that short sellers operate, which is make a short bet against the company and then go out into the media and talk about how shitty this company is, whether it was justified or not. They make their money. The company goes under. Hundreds to thousands of workers lose their jobs. And Jim Cramer he loved it. He's talking about this is the game. This is how the game was played. This is how he played the game. But so this is the same thing that I see is people are desperate, right? People are unemployed. People are out of work. They got a stimulus, but a $600 stimulus, $1,800 total after, 10 months of lockdown and pandemic, right? This is a pittance. These are breadcrumbs.
Yeah, but friends are like, oh, good. I can pay maybe a third of my rent now.
Exactly. The idea is what am I supposed to do with this? There's nothing I can really do except gamble it away and hope that I strike it rich because there is literally no way to move up. And so the problem that we have on the left is this sort of energy is something that can easily lead to, you know, not the vulgar type of class consciousness, but an actual type of class consciousness. Because yes, the system is designed in such a way to exploit you till the day that you die. The capitalist system is not something you should look towards for a dignified retirement or even a dignified working life. It is not designed to provide a dignified life. It is designed to generate profit. It is designed to generate profit as efficiently as possible. Whether people's livelihoods are destroyed, people get sick, people die, that is not what the capitalist system is designed to prevent. And this is the type of thing that can be channeled into something like real class consciousness. You are being exploited. You're not being exploited directly by hedge funds, although, of course, we all are being exploited by hedge funds. Mm-hmm. We are being exploited by landlords. We are being exploited by bosses. And the only way to fight against that is to form a real movement with all of the fellow members of your class who are also being exploited.
Yeah, I've been telling people, oh, so you like watching Wall Street sweat bullets as this market short squeeze fucks with their profits? Wait till I tell you about general strikes.
Exactly. And I think that is a goal for us. I mean, it's sort of, Karl Marx said that religion is the opiate of the masses.
Yeah.
And it's sort of misinterpreted to mean that, you know, Karl Marx thought religion was all bullshit, which he probably did. But
no, but also, yeah, you're right. It's taken out of historical context in addition to the context of the entirety of that passage. In Marx's day, opium was a painkiller. It wasn't, you know, we didn't have this opioid epidemic like we have today. They would literally hand them out like candy. The Sears catalog had neat little junkie kits so that you could shoot opium like a classy gentleman. It was Tylenol. It was Aleve. And yeah, in the full context of that quote, Marx says that, you know, it's the sigh of the oppressed man, the soul of a soulless condition.
Exactly. And I see a lot of that in the whole GameStop phenomenon where people are just like, this is all I can do, right? I'm going to believe in this because what else can I believe in?
Yeah, like half of my friends have started talking like they're in Wolf of Wall Street and it drives me crazy. And this is sort of the double-edged sword that we're having to deal with. Because on the one hand, yes, this is a moment, absolutely. And it could be used towards class consciousness. But what I'm instead seeing getting is this sort of petty bourgeois and bourgeois aspirations of class mobility. And on the one hand, we can absolutely point to the government response to this and, you know, the mass media talking points around it and say, look, here's how bourgeois institutions and legal frameworks directly inhibit class mobility. But at the same time, that's also getting dangerously close to an argument in favor of class mobility instead of workers' power, which can get people more invested in the system. And I think that what we as leftists need to be doing is pointing out that there cannot be a capitalist investor class without an exploited and oppressed working class, and that we just need to drive that point home as hard as we can.
Right. The profit has to come from somewhere. And if you are trying to engage with the sharks in dividing up the profit amongst themselves, you will always lose because you are not a shark. You are part of the school of fishes that the sharks feed on.
Mm-hmm. It's also important to note the direct inverse proportion between wages and profits, which is to say that all profits are unpaid wages and all wages are cut from profits.
Exactly. The national output is always divided into the share that goes to labor and the share that goes to profits. And you cannot increase the one without decreasing the other. And in the case of fictitious capital and financial markets, it's not about increasing both wages and profits, but it is about a section of the ruling class fighting each other over the division of the profit share. And everybody who's fighting over the division of the profit share would like the profit share to grow at the expense of the wage share.
Right. I think we've covered a lot of ground today. I think this discussion was good, and hopefully our listeners find it informative. Do you have any advice to our listeners who are thinking about dipping their toes into the stock market, or maybe who have even invested a small bit of money in the stocks just to, you know, see what happens in the wake of all this chaos?
So I'm an economist, so I know nothing about the stock market. I have no good advice for investing in the stock market.
Right. Osman is an actual scientist, not a gambler.
I mean, I wouldn't say economics is even close to a science, but I will say, advice for people thinking about getting into stocks. I mean, the classic advice is to put your money into a exchange-traded fund like Vanguard and then forget about it. Just put it in, leave it for 10 years. As far as investing in GameStop or not investing in GameStop, I would say that investing in GameStop or really any highly volatile single stock is a very, very dangerous game.
Yeah, don't put in anything that you are not 100% comfortable losing, especially now because, again, the stocks have been driven high. They might get driven a little higher, especially when the short squeeze actually happens. But it's entirely possible that this is it and the stock price is just going to start plummeting as people offload their shares.
Right. So if you're thinking about putting money in, you should assume that you've already lost it. Think about it as you are paying for entertainment because as likely as not, you're not getting any of that money back.
All right. Yeah. For our listeners who haven't heard your episodes before, do you want to tell people where they can find you on social media and follow your work?
Yes. So I have a Twitter account, which I'm not very good at, but it is Cashman_X. And most of my takes and stuff can be found on that Twitter. I retweet all of my podcasts and some of the work that I do. So you can look me up there.
All right. Thank you once again, ladies, gentlemen, and everything in between. Osman Keshawars, your favorite economist and mine. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me again, Alex. I look forward to being back again, hopefully after these things have calmed down.
You have been listening to Socialist Resurgence. If you would like to learn more about us, we invite you to explore the other articles and documents on our website at socialistresurgence.org. If you like what you see there and want to be part of what we do, sign up to join us or make a donation to support our efforts. Reach out to us at thesocialistresurgence@gmail.com if you have any questions or would like to collaborate with us in the future. If you enjoyed today's episode, tell your friends. If you didn't, tell your enemies. In all seriousness, though, please like and subscribe to our podcast. Give us a good rating, leave us a review, and share the link to our show with your comrades. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/socialistresurgence. Follow us on Instagram at socialistresurgence, and on Twitter at socialistresurv1. These are just a few things you can do to help support us at absolutely no cost to you, other than perhaps a minute of your time. Thank you for listening. Our theme music is the United Front Song, originally written by Bertolt Brecht and composed by Hans Eisler, rearranged and performed by Danger Dean Cohen on guitar and your humble host on bass. Until next time, this is Socialist Resurgence, signing off.